Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio. There we go. Having a little volume problem here. Okay. We're all situated now. So we've had some little change in our lineup here. We've got some updates on stuff for you. But you're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
No, you're not, because we couldn't hear you.
Hello.
There you go. And our ever effervescing engineer.
I'm Bob Martin.
Yeah, so there you go. You've got all the voices that go with the program. Okay, so we've had a little change to our East Coast programming. Here on the West Coast, you can hear us live Sundays from noon to 2. That's Pacific time because we're in far northern California. And then the show airs actually in its entirety, but they compress it to an hour and a half. So it's commercial free. It's on the East Coast on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network, WNJC 1360 AM. That's going to be Saturdays from 2:30 to 4. So all that stuff's right on the front page of the website. There's also a really terrific phone number. So if you have people who like conservative radio and they don't have computer connection,
they got a phone.
But yeah, but they have, you know, maybe unlimited long distance or whatever. The number's 832-999-1199. And the programs in the Conservative Commandos network just loop. So anyway, you can find all that at wethepeopleradio.us. So let's speed on to our guest. We have two guests today. Second half, we will be chatting about the First Amendment case that the Attorney General of California lost, actually, with Mario Lopez, the president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund. I think that's going to be a really super interesting topic. And then here in the first hour, we are chatting with Walt Hare, who I don't even know how to – I'm just going to read right off his site because there's so much to tell you I don't want to blow it, and I'm not an expert here, so I'll let Walt be the expert. It says here on the one article, he is the man who has had two sex changes. The incredible story of Walt, who became Laura, then reversed the operation because he believes surgeons in the U.S. and Europe are too quick to operate. And I read an article in Heritage that was written by Walt. I've linked all that on the webpage for you. And I thought, oh, my gosh, he just said all the stuff that so many people are either wondering about or think already, but we're not allowed to say. So that perfect chance to give Walt a forum and let him explain it. So how are you doing this afternoon, Walt?
I'm doing great. Great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I just exhausted all our information, so the rest is all you.
I can just go now. You've got all my information. I can just leave, you know.
No, we just got to the part where we don't know anything.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I don't know how you typically tell this story, but we're game for wherever you want to begin.
Well, yeah, I mean it's a hard story to tell. It's certainly relevant today.
Absolutely.
I started out like many people who suffer with gender dysphoria, struggling with gender identity at a very young age, and for me. It was at the age of 4 that this all started for me. So I was cross-dressing at the age of 4 and did so for, you know, many, many years. And one thing I do want the audience to know is that the vast majority of transgenders are not homosexual, and I fall into that category. And we heard Bruce Jenner talk about this, Caitlin, whoever. You know, he admits that, you know, he's not homosexual, and it seems to surprise people. But if we begin to understand that gender dysphoria has nothing whatsoever in the world to do with sexuality, it has everything to do with how we see ourselves. And then what we want to find out is why do we see ourselves as a different gender? And when we start looking at the research findings, we discover that gender dysphoria, according to the research findings, is a childhood developmental disorder where children especially children, become confused and anxious about their gender identity, and that confusion and anxiety turns into depression that evolves into dysphoria. And dysphoria itself is the opposite side of euphoria. So what we understand is then gender dysphoria is a form of gender depression. So I struggled with that for many years, and until I did get married while I was struggling with the dysphoria at the age of 21, and was married for 17 years, lived in California, as a matter of fact. And after many, many years, went for psychotherapy to a, quote, gender specialist. In fact, the guy that I went to was the guy who wrote the what we now know is identified as the standards of care for diagnosing and treating people who suffer with gender dysphoria. So I went to a guy who was, clinically speaking, was probably one of the most well-read and well-known persons in the world. So he diagnosed me with gender dysphoria and recommended the gender reassignment surgery, which I waited 2 years after the original diagnosis and went back to him 2 years later to be reevaluated. And he said, yes, you're still suffering from gender dysphoria, and the only cure for that is gender reassignment surgery. And so I opted for the gender reassignment surgery. But what I learned later, as I studied psychology at UC Santa Cruz, to become someone who could help others with these disorders, is that gender dysphoria is not, there is no medical necessity for gender reassignment surgery, because according to the research, not according to Walt Heyer, but according to research studies from around the world, including Rome, Japan, the UK, Sweden, and Denmark, people with gender dysphoria are suffering from what they call psychiatric and psychological comorbid disorders that are routinely never diagnosed, and therefore, because they're not diagnosed, they're never treated. So somewhere between 10 and 15 years, people discover that they still have a dysphoria, but now they've altered their body and their life to such a degree that that's even more troubling than it was if they'd gotten the proper treatment to begin with. So that's kind of where I am today, and I have a website, sexchangeregret.com, that currently is reaching about 50,000 people per month. I do media around the world, from Russia to UK to Australia and every other place in the world. We reach 180 countries around the world because people are very interested in knowing what is the onset of gender dysphoria, and they're kind of puzzled by two things. One, that it's a childhood developmental disorder. Again, that's not my opinion. It's what the research studies show. And also that most of them are not homosexual. So that's kind of the, in a nutshell, the whole transgender story of where I am.
Hey, Walt, we got to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to go back to, you know, you said you were four when this whole thing kind of manifested itself. And I'd like to talk a little bit about how you were supported or not supported in that decision at that age. What was your life like and so forth at four that sent you down that road? So we're going to come right back.
Yeah, we have a million questions. We just don't know how to ask them.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, if it's a bad question, I'll just say no.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Well, we try not to be weird, but, you know, we're curious. So we are chatting with Walt Heyer, and we'll be right back. You can find all Walt's information on wethepeopleradio.us. Mm-hmm.
buildings reach up to the sky. The traffic thunders on the busy street. Pavement slips beneath my feet. I walk alone and wonder, who am I?
Nice. You are listening to We the People. We are here with Walt Heyer. And title of the article that I read that prompted me to get a hold of Walt is, I used to be transgender. Here's my take on kids who think they are transgender. And it's a story about a 9-year-old boy selling Girl Scout cookies. And I'm just going to speed to the end because that was the part where I was like, I got to find this guy. It says, the neighbor man was correct about one thing. The Girl Scout at his door was really a boy in a dress, just like I was a young boy who thought I was a girl. And, you know, it's just ripped out of the headlines. We hear this all the time. So, right. Before we went on break, Bill was asking you, Walt, a little bit more about when you were a kid.
Yeah, if we could, let's talk about if we can, when you were that age, what support or lack of support did you have to talk about your feelings and talk about you were.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think we expect way, way too much out of a 4-year-old kid. When you start talking about what's a kid feel like, I mean, at the age of 3 or 4 or 5, children are looking for affirmation, they're looking for love, and they're looking for feeling safe. They want to feel safe. They want to feel like they're really cared for. And in my case, I cannot tell you how it started, but I started cross-dressing at the age of 4 while I was being babysat by my grandmother at her house. And she seemed to really be much more excited about me being a girl than she ever was about me being a boy. And she focused on this, and she said, this will be our little secret. And so it became kind of what we did for nearly 2.5 years when I was babysat by my grandmother. We cross-dressed. She even made me a purple chiffon evening dress. Now, in retrospect today, looking back, what I see now is that a young child that I was, a boy, that grandma's affirming this change of gender identity by helping with making me a dress, helping me cross-dress, was actually fracturing my male gender identity. So because she seemed to love the girl so much more than she did the boy. So there was, when you talk about feelings, I was feeling much more loved as a girl than I was as a boy. So obviously that would be something I would really want to migrate toward. If I was being loved more as a girl, why wouldn't I want to be the girl? So, so therein lies the start of dysphoria. You know, I became dysphoric about my male gender identity because my grandmother did not like my male gender identity as much as she did the made up female gender identity that was purely a fantasy and as she called it, our little secret. So once you plant these seeds in a 3 or 4 year old child and then nurture that seed just like you would growing something in your garden and water it by giving it affirmation and support and even giving it some reality, you've started something that in the psyche is very, very troubling because the person then is dealing actually with the old identity and the new one that's being affirmed. So there's where the fracturing and the brokenness comes. Now, when I started out as many years ago and today there's no real healing. In California, you can't even go to a therapist and ask for help for gender identity because they've made it against the law. So, when I was young, nobody knew anything about it. I may have been one of the first, transgender kids because It was when I was cross-dressing was in 1944.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So do you think what's going on now? I mean, you're hearing now where they're passing these laws where if you feel like a girl, you can use the girl's restroom. If you feel like a boy, you can use the boy. Do you think that's kind of playing into this same psyche of
just making everybody feel confused?
Just confusing kids at that age that, you know, or down the road are going to be facing these same challenges?
Well, I'm not sure that it's confusing them. I think probably more what it's doing is affirming an ideology about the change of gender that in reality doesn't exist. Because, and I say that not because I'm trying to be abusive or harsh or anything such as that.
Well, let's face it, you're not going to be able to say anything that isn't going to be harsh to somebody on this one.
I suppose you're right.
Yeah, I say something, I don't know exactly how to word it either.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You know, what we do know is absolutely impossible to change somebody's gender. Now, it's not impossible to make somebody look like they changed their gender. So that's kind of where we are. Now, so I think the bathroom thing, and one of the things that sort of really caught my curiosity of late is the fact that they call the bathroom bill anti-LGBT. Well, that is so off base, it's laughable, because if you take a lesbian as an example, all lesbians know what bathrooms to go into. They're not confused about going into the women's restroom. So, you know, the L of the LGBT doesn't have a problem with any of the bathroom stuff. So then if you move to the G, which is the gay men, they don't have any trouble knowing which bathroom to go into. They know they're men, and they go into the bathroom. And then if you take the B of the LGBT, and, you know, they're not confused about their gender. They just like dealing sexually with both genders. So they go into the right biological restroom without any problem.
And I never thought about it like this.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is that transgenders, like I was, I lived eight years as a transgender. I never had any problem knowing which restroom to go into because I was female Laura Jensen. I looked like a female. I never had any problem, never had any question about whether I was female or not. So it's not even any of the LGBT, it's not anti at all, because what the real issue is if there's a group called gender nonconforming, and it is the gender nonconformists, which make up, this is such a minuscule,
microscopic,
yeah, really,
percentage of the population. When you think that transgenders make up 0.3% of 1%, we're talking really small numbers. Now, in terms of gender nonconforming, it's a fraction. They represent a fraction of the transgender. So we're doing all of these laws to accommodate the smallest fraction of people who do not want to conform. They really do not want to conform to gender norms. And so it really isn't anti-LGBT, because the L, G, B, and T all know which bathroom to go into. That's pretty simple. But it's the people who don't want to conform to the label on the door that are causing these laws to be, erupted. So it's really odd that we would give such a small fraction of the population, it's small, and then give them the power over the entire rest of the population about who goes into what bathroom. So if we look at this, there's nothing anti-LGBT about it at all.
Yeah,
because it's all been spurned and started by people who just don't want to conform to gender norms. And those people, frankly, are not transgender, they're not lesbian, they're not gay, and they're not bisexual. They're a whole different group.
Well, they're probably
they're just people. They're just people with a solution in search of a problem.
Well, that's probably not the only thing they don't want to conform with either. I mean, let's face it; they probably don't want to conform with a bunch of different things, and that just happens to be a hot button right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I have linked. I've linked a handful of articles. It was not hard to find you on the internet. At all, not difficult. There's quite a bit. And maybe when we come back from this break, you could talk to us a little bit about some of the I was curious about the pushback that you get, because honestly, you know, after going through all this, it seems like, you know, it'd be easy to just go live your life. And instead, you became very, very public and have, I'm sure, helped a lot of people. But you're a voice that is that's really rare. I just was curious if there are other people out there speaking out like you are, and what kind of a reception you get, you know, everywhere. There's an article in Media Matters, and all you have to do is read down through the comment section. It's like, oh, wow, stupidity is alive and well.
Yeah.
So we'll be right back. And Walt, let me just figure out, do I say your name? Is it Hyer or Hayer?
It is Hyer, just like...
Yeah, hire you for
taxes.
A job. Sure. Like just like taxes. That's right. We should have landed on that the first time. Just wanted to make sure I was saying it properly. So we have Walt Hyer with us, and he is an author and a public speaker with a passion to help others who regret gender change. His website is sexchangeregret.com. He has a blog at walthyer.com, and you can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us. And I hope you're listening with a pencil in your hand, because if you're not, you're going to miss everything. We'll be right back.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. A miracle. Oh, it was beautiful, magical. And all the birds in the trees, they'd be singing so happily. Oh, joyfully. Oh, playfully, watching me. But then they sent me. Singing bird in the croaking toad. I've got a name. I've got a name. And I carry it with me like my daddy did. But I'm living the dream that he kept here. Rolling me down the highway. Rolling me down the highway.
Welcome back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Walt Hyer, and he is now 74. He acts as a counselor to those who are considering sex change surgery and feels that the psychological vetting of patients before the operation is inadequate. And, you know, most of us can't comment on that, Walt, because we really don't know. So you're in a very small group of experts, really, but you take a lot of shots, I would imagine, for this.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I don't counsel anybody. What I do is I provide research studies that are done by research organizations, colleges, universities, and others. I provide information to people who are considering the change, and let them make their own decision about whether they feel it's going to be adequate for them or a good thing for them. But I don't I don't try to counsel them away. I just let the research work speak for that. And but most of the people that I spend time working with or talking with are the people who've gone through it, and 8, 9, 10, 15, 20 years later said, wow, this was not a good thing, and they want help. So so I don't, you know, I'm not in the discouragement business.
No.
except to provide information so people can make an informed decision, which I was not allowed to do when I was told that I needed the surgery.
Right. Well, I guess because I was reading this the Dopes at Media Matters, and it was just, the whole thing was kind of, you already explained the LGBT thing in the last segment, and so this makes their whole article basically stupid, which is like most of their stuff, but a popular right-wing activist with extreme discredited views about LGBT people is making the media rounds. It's like, okay, that whole sentence makes no sense.
Yeah, see, I don't ever read that stuff.
That's probably good.
You know, I realize that, you know, this is what they need to do, but what they don't know is that, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic, 30 years recovery as of today, as a matter of fact.
Good for you.
And my sponsor and longtime friend is a homosexual, and among the group of people that I know, there's lesbians and others that are friends of mine. So the fact that someone would report that I'm anti, and I've been a transgender, and the fact that they're saying right. I'm anti-LGBT is just, I mean, it should be a Saturday Night Live skit rather than something that somebody could print.
That's what I mean. As I read this, I thought, wow, this isn't even close. But you had a hard road because you have kids and you were
yeah.
you were married at the well you were divorced just before you did the surgery, right?
That's correct.
I read several things, and so I don't want to get things sideways.
Yeah.
But
right.
And then you worked all that out afterward, you know, with your kids. I thought that part of there was one very long article that I've linked here on the page, and I thought your whole going back to your kids and talking to them about what you did and making and mending those fences, I guess, or building.
Right.
I thought that was great, actually. There are a lot of people whose parents should do that regardless of what they did.
Well, yeah, I think when a parent's really been very foolish and done things that have harmed their children, they need to make amends to them. And, you know, and sometimes it doesn't suffice for the children. They're still going to remain angry, but you still have to do what you can. And so I just don't want anybody else to go through what I've gone through. Everything about from my life, from my perspective, and from literally hundreds of letters that I've got from people who've gone through the surgery has convinced me that in the long run, there is really nothing good about changing genders surgically and devoting your life to being a transgender. It has long-range implications that are just not very rewarding. Now, I will say that 100% of the people at the outcome of right after surgery, they're all very happy. You know, there is this tremendous period of happiness and joy and all that stuff that goes on. For each individual, however, that fades over time. And some people, I've had them write me and tell me that it went away at 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I've had some of them write me. I have one, not some. I had one specific one write me and say it was 30 years later. So anywhere in between, people come to realize that there's something about changing genders that will have a regrettable outcome. And that, I think, is a message that doesn't get out there. And the fact that if you look on the blog and you'll see that the studies show that the vast majority of people who opt for a gender change have mental disorders. None of them are, you know, wacko disorders. They're just bipolar disorder or dissociative disorder or obsessive compulsive disorder or schizophrenia. I mean, they're all treatable disorders. That's my point. I mean, I'm not trying to paint them as being a wacko population. What they really need, rather than hormones and someone chopping off body parts, is actually some good, sound psychotherapy. But now what we have is people who are writing for these other opposing views are preventing anyone from really having access to good psychotherapy that would prevent them from having surgery. So that's kind of where I come from.
So what I hear you saying is you were...
Nice job, Dr. Bill.
Yeah. The unhappiness, the unhappiness and depression that you experienced prior to your surgery went away after the surgery, but then came back a short time later. So that obviously told you that wasn't the problem. Now, how
right.
many... What's the, or do you know what the percentage of people that experience that same effect that go through what you went through, what percentage of people fall into that category?
Well, you know, there's two things that when we talk about this, that are really important for people to kind of get their head around and dialogue about. First off, the transgender population as a whole, people who claim to be transgender or self-identify as transgender, 41% of them attempt suicide. So if we look at
Yikes.
That group, 41% will attempt suicide at some point during or after their transition. So if you look at that and then say to yourself, I don't know anybody who is happy with their life that's going to try to end it by committing suicide. So if, in my view, I look at the 41% as sort of the regretters who we cannot hear from on the radio. I happen to be one of the ones who attempted suicide and didn't die, however, so you are hearing from me. But, and then I've got a blog posting on my blog that shows that somewhere around 20%, according to some study, I don't remember which one it was because it was so long ago, that about 20% of the people regret the surgery. Now, there was a doctor, Dr. Charles Ilenfeld, who was one of the original people who administered hormones and therapy to some 500 transgenders over a six-year period during the 70s. And he said that a change of gender, and this is his words, now he was a homosexual activist and doctor helping transgenders transition, and he said that changing genders, and I quote, is only a temporary reprieve and not a lifelong solution.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from him. I don't think there's any real adequate percentages that you can put on how many people regret it. But I look at the reported 41% who commit suicide, attempt suicide, as regretters. Because they must be regretting it.
So that's 41% after the surgery?
Well, it's before and after. Through
okay.
anybody who identifies at some point will have said that they had attempted suicide.
Wow. That's a huge number.
That's big.
So if there's any portion of that people who are left, then we could say that, you know, it's pretty much a crapshoot from there on out how many people are really going to benefit from it long term. And I'll reiterate that everybody thinks it's really good the first several years. For me, it was 8 years. I know people have gone as long as 20 years. So what we're seeing in the young children who are being put on television and stuff, they may be getting a lot of affirmation right now, but we really don't know what the long-term outcome, if it's actually going to be beneficial to them to have been given TV shows and given such media focus or not, that still remains an open question.
Yeah, you know, and with this, nobody can say no to anything, and we've got to accept everything no matter, you know, what it is. And I'm sure there are a segment of parents out there that think, well, I'm afraid to mess up my kid by telling him that this isn't reality, and you're not allowed to go to a counselor and sort that out in the state of California anyway. Is that common across the country, or is that just out here with us crazy people?
Well, it's starting to work its way through many segments of the country, but I think there's some people in different places that are starting to wake up to the fact and kind of learn that, you know, there's also a study that's on my blog that shows if we leave the children alone, 94% of them would actually grow out of their gender dysphoria if we just didn't encourage them toward a gender change.
Oh. If you just let them grow up.
Yeah, you just, you know,
imagine that.
You don't buy them a dress, you don't get them little pink pumps, and you don't send them off to school and affirm that they're really somebody they're not. And, you know, I know that's not very popular, but the studies and everything that I say, I can back up with a university or some organization, so I'm not just speaking off the cuff or trying to be harsh or anything else.
Right.
There's studies out there, and there's life stories like mine that back it up.
Well, when you grew up, was there much of a male influence in your life as a young child?
Yeah. I was sexually molested by my uncle.
Oh, well, that's not a good male
that's
influence.
Not exactly the influence I was looking for.
Yeah, and that's from the people who write me, there's a pretty good, not every one of them, but there's a pretty good percentage of people who are transgender that were molested or sexually abused as a young child.
Wow.
Well, see, that just goes back to your conclusion that they really need some psychological help. And now we've prevented that. Isn't that smart of us? We need to take one last quick break. We'll be back with Walt. To finish off our thoughts, we have a lot of people asking if you were an only child and if you have brothers and sisters and, if, you know, all these things. You know, everybody's curious about all this. So maybe you could give us some rapid-fire information when we come back.
I can do that. I can do rapid-fire.
We can do Walt Lightning Round. You're listening
there
to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
You give your hand to me and then you say hello. I can hardly speak, my heart is beating so, and anyone can tell, you think you know me well, but you don't know me.
If it makes you happy, it can't be that bad, if it makes
Welcome back. You're rejoining We the People Radio. We are here with Walt Heyer. Okay, Walt. So, what are some other things people need to know that we haven't that we just don't know to ask you?
Well, yeah. I mean, when at the break you asked me if I had a brother. Yes, I do. He was raised or babysat by a different grandmother in a different part of Los Angeles, so he didn't have the same experience I did. And so it was a rather shock to him to learn what my grandmother did. In fact, he just can't believe it. You know, he didn't have the uncle experience. He didn't have my experience. And my uncle molested me because he found out that my grandmother had been cross-dressing me, and he thought that was, you know, I was a good target because I was a boy wearing a dress. So everything evolved from grandma cross-dressing me and making that dress. But if you want the story, because I'm self-supporting in all that I do, the book
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Kid Dakota and the Secret at Grandma's House tells the story. And then if you want more research information, the book Paper Genders, which is sold worldwide and has been reprinted in Italian and published in Italy, is a great book for resource information, as well as the other books. So more detail can be found in those books.
That's terrific. I did see that, and my bad, I did not link those. I linked a lot of links and put a couple articles on, but I will put your book links on there because that's a great idea. For people who just, you know, don't know anything about this topic, maybe don't have anybody in their family who's dealing with this that they know of, how can they be helpful? Like, for us huddled masses out here that are going, is the world gone crazy?
Yeah, I it's very difficult to be helpful to people who are confused and struggle themselves. I would just plead with people to get informed so that when they talk about it, they're not reading off the LGBT playlist about what this is, because there's more than one playlist, and so there is a lot of studies that refute all the claims that the LGBT makes about transgender. So, that's my plea is for people. I always tell people, get educated. Don't take my word for it. Read the studies. That's why I've put so many studies in all my books. I link to all the studies so that it's not my word speaking. I'm more of a person who's pointing people to the studies rather than me making some outlandish claim. It's the research information that gives us the information that tells us there's something wrong. And this guy that did this, Dr. Hillenfeld in the late 70s said that he left giving hormone therapy and helping people change genders because he said there is too many suicides and too much unhappiness among the people changing genders, so I'm going to study psychiatry, and he became a psychiatrist. He's still a practicing psychiatrist up in New Jersey.
Uh-oh. Bob?
Hello?
Oh, there we go.
Oh, there we are.
It got really quiet there for a second. It was like...
Yeah, so did you get that?
Yep. Sorry. I think the NSA must have gotten a little scramble going on their tape.
It's really about educating people. People can't help someone if they're not well-informed about it. All they can do is follow what the TV is telling them. And, you know, and the TV is doing what we call... There's a psychological term for it. It's called flooding. And desensitizing by having ABC as an example, over 50% of their primetime content is LGBT oriented.
So yes, we've noticed.
When you have a population of LGBT comprised 3.4% of the total population, and then on television they have over 50% of LGBT content, you know that we're being brainwashed.
Absolutely. And you know, there are a lot of us out there who think that, but it, you know, we're kind of not allowed to say it. But it's nice to get a little confirmation on this because it feels like sometimes we're living in crazy town.
Yeah. Well, you are.
And we got that from the expert.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, thanks for taking time out of your travels today to chat with us. We'd love to have you back, especially if you'd like to promote one of the books in a little more detail or any of that.
Sure.
Thanks very much. We really...
thanks for being on, Walt. It was very, very, very interesting.
We've waded into water that was brand new for us.
Well, good. I'm glad I could do it. Thank you for allowing me the privilege to be on and speak about it and an effort to really help people. I'm not trying to hurt anybody at all.
Absolutely. Thanks a million. Folks, you can find all the information about Walt Heyer on our site, wethepeopleradio.us, his blog, links, and books.